What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast where player ID is always promoted. We call it the Scouting Report. Coming up, Sunderland take the mick, Ipswich leave it very late. We build up to the biggest championship game of the season so far, and more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Back with you in our regular Wednesday slot this week, folks. Hope you're doing well. Pretty miserable out there as I look on this Wednesday morning in the UK. Hopefully it's a bit brighter where you are. We are back to full strength this week to talk all things Football League. So it's me, Matt Davis Adams, joined by Adrian Clark.
Hello. And Sam is gracious with his presence, which I'm very excited about. It means Lily caught you off guard.
Yeah. How you doing, Sam Parkin?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Yeah, we're very well, thank you. We'll get to our opening gambit momentarily. But first, let me tell you about the offer from our friends at Quinbet, who've enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It is 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. And while we're plugging things, you can follow us on X at EFL WhatThat and on Instagram and TikTok at WhatTheEFL. And if you could leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, we'd appreciate that too. All right, opening gambit time then. Okay, so on Tuesday night, there was lots of late drama at Portman Road where Ipswich eventually beat Rotherham 4-3. We'll talk about that in a second. There were two stoppage time goals here, and it made me wonder, what are the chap's favourite reminiscences on late, late goals? Adrian, I'm interested to hear yours. Is it a game you played in, a game you attended, or something different?
Yeah. I assumed you meant that it was one that I played in, and it's hard because it's so long ago. I mean, I'm pretty ancient now, but there is one that really springs to mind, and I've re-looked at it. In terms of the way the game went, it's Forest Green Stevenage down there at the New Lawn, and we were 2-0 down to a team, by the way, a Forest Green side that contained Nigel Spink in goal, Tony Daly on the wing, and QPR ledge Dennis Bailey. Quite a star-studded side there. 2-0 down, 15 minutes to go, we were gone. And then, we launched this comeback and, Neil Ilman scored. Then I got one. I remember that as my first league goal for Stevenage. And then I set up Ilman for a very last kick of the match winner, which was awesome. But the thing that I remember most is that we all stayed out, milked the applause from the fans. And then, coming back in the changing room, I think I've told this story before, but Paul Fairclough was there and all he had this gesture that it was basically that we had massive bollocks, and he kept gesturing like he's basically bending down almost to the floor from his waist, saying, "Boys, I'm loving your bollock. You boys have got some pure ass, blah blah blah." And I just couldn't get that picture out of my head, because Cluffy, even though he probably wasn't that old at the time, seemed old, and it just seemed a little bit strange that someone like that was saying what bigs we had. But we did that day. It was great.
I got a Paul Clarkey up banding around the world legend with Dennis Bailey. But if he is going to have legendary status at QPR, do you know why, Clarkey? Do you know the game?
Man U, isn't it?
Yeah, Man U. New Year's Day.
Of course I know it.
1992, maybe. I was on a ferry and I was listening in. I mean, how old school was that? On the wireless. I've had to wrap my brain, actually. And I just looked it up to make sure it was in the 90th minute or later, which it was. Wycombe Wanderers away, my first season at Swindon. We were 2-1 down and I scored twice in the last 10 minutes. Pouring rain, pitch invasion, hoarding collapse, just all the ingredients. And you know that away end at Adams Park, a few of my mates in there, and Johnny Jackson was in the team, the Swindon team that day. And it was actually his shot that was parried out by Frank Tallier, I think, was in goal for Wickham, and I put in the rebound, kind of bounced up, and I just kind of put it into the roof of the net. But it was more, the circumstances, the fans, and to this day, my mates and Jacko's mates still talk about it. And that's kind of the day that they were kind of adopted as Swindon fans. So they were behind, and I think it was driving rain, behind that goal, and just, amazing feeling. And I've spoken about
it. Pylon.
Yeah. I did some weird little slide. Yeah, I wasn't much of a slider, but it was like a deluge. And it was kind of like a tackle, if you can picture it. So I've just done like a weird sliding tackle, and then all the lads on top of me. But I often say on the podcast, I think they're kind of, other than like the opportunity you get to play in finals and win stuff, they're the moments that I really miss. They're like the 15, 20 minutes in the dressing room after a last minute winner, because you've still got that emotion and that adrenaline.
Very good. Mine can't really compare to that, but I'm going to go for a fairly recent one. Forest at Bristol City, October 2021. Lyle Taylor, who was on Tuesday night sent off for Cambridge. Forest trailing by a goal to nil in stoppage time. Lyle Taylor equalises in stoppage time. Then Forest get a penalty, and Lyle Taylor does that, cool walk up to the ball, run up. Even during that time, scenes in the away end, limbs amongst the players. Jed Spence lost his tracking device, his GPS piece of equipment. How on earth do you lose a tracking device? Surely that's the whole point of them. All right, that was the opening gambit. We're going to talk about Tuesday's games next. And we're going to start with Southampton. Maybe you were right all along, Clarkie. Maybe they are just frauds who are going to blow up at the end of the season. Beaten 2-1 at St Mary's by Hull. First time they've lost at home since September. They dropped to fourth. Should we be talking about Southampton, or should we be talking about Liam Rossini and maybe him being a low-key candidate for manager of the season?
Yeah, look, I never called them frauds. Just want to put that out on record. I said they had a lot of work to do, and they did that work. They're just having an iffy patch now. But I don't think there can be any argument here that Hull deserved to win. I think that it was a pretty sensational performance from them. And in terms of being manager of the year, I don't know about that, but because I quite fancied them ahead of the season, and I thought that they'd recruited well, and they've gone again with good recruitment. Look at the players they've got now. Liam Delap's out, but you had Zaruri in there, Fabio Carvalho, Billy Sharp was on the bench. They've added some real quality. But yeah, this was all about pressing the game. It was sort of both teams effectively went man-to-man, matched each other up in shape, and Hull did it better. They were a little bit more aggressive, more organised, made fewer mistakes. And obviously we saw a massive mistake from Joe Rothwell for the opening goal, where he gets it off Bazunu, just holds on to it too long and gets caught, and they score. So, it was a real step in the right direction for Hull. I think four straight away victories now for them. Absolutely terrific.
3-2-1 as well, which has got to be, you've got to get quite long odds on winning three successive away games 2-1.
It is impressive. Yeah. Look, they had 17 shots in the game, Hull. They were well worthy winners. And I think there's a bit of quality sort of gathering for that last playoff spot. I mean, if West Brom are going to get fifth, as a lot of people expect, then, it's pretty Hull and Coventry, with Norwich sort of making a charge that looked the most likely. That's going to be quite a high class shootout, because they're all playing really, really well. As for Saints, an off night, bad first half. He corrected it. I think Joe Rebo came on and did well, but it's a bit of a damaging night for the Saints.
Well done to Hull. Game of the night, I think, was at Portman Road, Sam Ipswich going up to third, level on points with Leeds after Amari Hutchinson's winner on 90+5, which made me feel for Cafu, because he Panenka in a penalty in stoppage time. You're hoping that's going to get you at least a point, but wasn't to be for Rotherham. They're surely doomed. But Ipswich, back in form, it seems, gone from one win in nine to three in a row.
You're saving the snippet of audio from me saying that I think Hull could be in trouble for later in the season, are you, Matt? Thought you're going to come to me there, mate. Nice of you. This was obviously a thrilling end to a game, and everything I've read suggests that it wasn't a brilliant spectacle, which is bizarre. Seven goals going in. Sounds like Rotherham did a really good tactical job and disrupted Ipswich. Played a lot of diagonals. I think that pinned kind of Ipswich's back four back, Leif Davis in particular. Two real physical centre forwards. I think getting up against the two Ipswich centre halves, Burgess and Wolfenden, and causing them a problem. On the penalty, I mean, I love Keith Stroud. He's great fun, but I mean, that's not a penalty. That's not a penalty. I mean, I've only watched it a couple of times. I think it's Jackson, the substitute, who's only been on for 3 or 4 minutes, and he's played for it. The Rotherham player, and it would have been unjust probably for them to get a share of the spoils with a dodgy decision, but brilliantly crafted goal. The winner, I felt that it could be a night for maybe these new signings, and it was good to see you know, Kiefer Moore on the score sheet again, and now Hamady impressing. I think, you know, he's not getting the starts at the moment, and it's a bit of a leap for him. But to see him coming on and having a have an effect is excellent, and I think could be important for them moving forward. But I mean, 26 now they've conceded at home. I think it's 11. Leeds and Leicester have conceded. So, you know, multiple goals they concede. And I suppose, is that going to be their Achilles heel? Lackey definitely for the second. I think it was Clark and Wolfenden, probably more Clark for the first one. So a little bit of a problem, but yeah, great couple of wins. The one at Millwall obviously was relatively comfortable, but the win at Swansea and the victory last night, in the context of what's going on, exceptional, but they're going to have to play better than they did last night.
Yeah, they remind me of Arsenal last year. So no one expected them to be up there. It's all wild with excitement, but also things are a little bit crazy in the games. You know, they're conceding, you know, too many goals. It's the fifth time they've leaked three or more goals in a game this season. Leeds and Leicester, it's happened twice and once, respectively. So that's the difference, really. They need to score too many goals. On Hutchison, by the way, I mean, I thought it was a great finish from Kiefer Moore. He got four already. I mean, that's pretty good going, isn't it? But Hutchison, I think that's three goals and two assists off the bench now. He's kind of made that little niche for himself, hasn't he, as a super sub. And fair play to him. And he was quite measured, considering it was such a dramatic goal. He didn't give it the Sammy Parkin sort of slide tackle, did he? It was nice and calm.
Yeah, the cool celebration seems to be the new thing. West Brom, convincing winners at Plymouth by 3-0. You said, Clarkey, that a lot of people got them pegged for fifth place. It's been a good few weeks for them, hasn't it, with news of the takeover looking like that's going through. Shalem Patel, the American businessman, has purchased 87.8% of the club, and they bounced back after that defeat to Southampton. But Plymouth, pretty generous hosts at the moment, aren't they? Four defeats from five all told for them, and Ian Foster struggling a little bit.
Yeah, he had a good start, didn't he? But they've had some quite hard fixtures, I think that should be said. But yeah, defensively a little bit poor, and that they allowed West. They weren't able to dictate this game. West Brom really did come at them and pinned them in, particularly in the second half. I think it was wave after wave of attacks. They scored three, could have had five or six. It was one of those nights, very, very impressive from West Bromwich Albion. So who were outclassed, by the way, at home to Southampton. You know, they didn't really lay much of a glove on them. So, you know, that's the gap, isn't it? The top teams really are top, and the rest, I think, you know, can't live with teams like West Brom on nights like this. I think the moment of the night was Mikey Johnson's goal. I must admit, I don't know much about this boy that's coming on loan from Celtic, but looks very exciting. Scored a couple of goals already, and this was lovely. Lovely run down the left, drops inside and spanks it far corner. And I think he was involved in another goal as well. So they've had a good pick up there. One other thing I noticed about West Brom was the bench looked much better. Dean Garner's on there, and quite a few returning players. Obviously, they've lost DK, and I think Thomas Asante was missing here, but they've got a bit of depth there now, a little bit more than they had anyway.
We don't need to talk about Cardiff Blackburn because it was 0-0 and a stinker. If we go into League One, Bolton won at Cambridge. They had to come from behind to do it. Our old pal Carlos Mendes Gomez, Sam, giving me David Platt against Belgium vibes of that volley dropping over his shoulder. Impressive win for Bolton, isn't it? And still ridiculously tight in that kind of, would you call it a three-way dance? Maybe you chuck Barnsley in there as well, but for the two automatic places between Pompey, Derby and Bolton.
Yeah, great goal. If I'm being pedantic, he's got to hook it more, hasn't he, to the opposite corner. And watching the highlights, Sheehan seemed to be at the forefront of everything Bolton did. Well, going forward, I thought it was a brilliant run, brilliant passer, an excellent finish. And yeah, he was part of that group of players, number of players that Bolton kind of had, forward players that they'd recruited at the back end of last season. It didn't quite happen for them. So now that those players have had a bit more time to gel into the Ian Everett way of playing, maybe this is going to be their year. And they're on a nice run now. Good way to respond from that wild game against Charlton, who we'll talk about later. But I think they definitely left with probably slightly more credit from that game. So, yeah, I mean, there's three kind of powerhouses there. I think you're right to highlight Barnsley. I think they're one of the stories we probably haven't covered too often this season. But they're going to do well to stay, you know, pace with with the aforementioned sides and Posh as well with the boost of winning last night.
Adrian, Reading beat Port Vale by 2-0. They're now 6 points clear of trouble, but Darren Moore's lost both games in charge of Vale so far. Enjoyed the Lewis Wing goal on the drill in from the edge of the box here, but we continue to be impressed with Reading and how they're coping with the adversity they're facing.
Yeah, look, Reading absolutely deserve to stay up. They're a good team. They really are. I really like the front four. Good players, young, good energy about them. I always liked Smith and Nibs at Cambridge as well. So yeah, they deserve to be 6 points clear of relegation. In truth, they're sort of upper mid-table, I think, in terms of their quality. They've had the third most shots in open play this season, Reading, in League One, which goes to show how front foot they tried to be under Ruben Selez. And yeah, I think they've shown extraordinary character. It's really difficult sort of situation there with the crowd protests and the ownership issues, but they've parked it quite magnificently. So well done to everyone at Reading. Femi Aziz for me is a bit of the star of the show at Reading. He's having a great season. Loves to travel with the ball. And I was looking, he's had 59 chance creating ball carries. Well, what's that mean? That means it's a dribble and a shot, or it's a dribble and a pass that sets someone else up. It's the third best record in the division. He's an exciting player, and he played really well in this game. Should have scored. He was quite unlucky. Most good things seem to come through Femi Aziz at the moment. But yeah, that goal from Lewis Wing, that is a sweet strike. I think with in capital letters for sweet, because yeah, you aren't going to hit that any better.
Not in terms of guile, maybe, but can't think of maybe a player at that level who'd have a better showreel. He must have a dozen or so, hasn't he? I mean, that's been his trademark, hasn't it? Did he come through at Middlesbrough? I'm not sure, but he certainly used to ping a few.
Yeah,
for them.
Yeah, he scored loads of good ones at Middlesbrough. Yeah, I remember. The manager did well in the game, by the way. I think he made a change with Charlie Savage coming on at half time. Basically, it was 0-0, a bit boring. And I think he just felt Savage might bring a little bit more sort of energy and it'll free up Wing to get forward. And obviously, we saw what happened. So, the manager got himself an assist, I think, as well that night.
Yeah, we're giving him some praise, aren't we, Ruben Selez? It looks like he's doing a good job there. The other game in League One saw Northampton score a 92nd-minute equaliser at Oxford 2-2. Tony Springett got it, his first senior goal on loan from Norwich, which is impressive considering he sounds like he would have played for Hartlepool in about 1974. The Football League trophy, Sam, is something that's very dear to your heart as a winner. Peterborough will be going to Wembley. They won 3-0 at Blackpool. No one cares about this competition until it gets to the semi-finals. Then all of a sudden, the clubs pretend that they were interested in it all along.
I had my shirt out the other day because of my match-worn shirt, because I went down to Swindon to do a podcast with the kit men who do a little pod down there.
Nice.
And so bring some shirts down because it's a nice setup in the kit room. They've got loads of players' shirts that they've recruited over the years that they've been given by ex-Swindon players. I had a nice bag full that I'd crept all the way along my eaves to find. And I left it at the front door. Went out to get in the car. Had a rucksack that I'd spent half an hour putting together in the morning. And we got down to Swindon, had nothing to show for my troubles. But yeah, there's a stain on it. I'm not sure if it's coffee or blood. I think it's become a little bit discoloured over the years, but very much match worn from Luton against Scunthorpe in this said competition. Yeah, the game, Peterborough looked far and away the better side. I mean, chances galore. I think you just had to look at Neil Critchley's reaction. I think at full time, he was just so despondent that they got that far in that competition and just didn't really turn up last night.
Nor did the fans, finish. Did they?
No, it looked
Where
like
were
that,
they?
Didn't it? Yeah.
One game from Wembley.
Especially against a team you've just beaten the previous weekend away from home. You'd think you'd be going into it with a bit of confidence.
Get yourself to Wembley. No, maybe they could have done with a bit more vociferous support, but... Yeah, I thought the first goal, Mothersill, brilliant finish. Interesting to see him getting an opportunity. But Pocu and Mason Clark, yeah, I mean, they're brilliant. When there's space to exploit, they're such a great sight, I think, those guys. I thought another very dodgy penalty. Harrison Burrow stuck it away, but it looked like the Posh player was kind of already... It was almost like he'd slid into the goalkeeper. Then there was a little bit of contact. So I thought that was a bit soft. But yeah, it was a really good win. And... I'll look forward to seeing them at Wembley, because I'm sure they'll be really exciting in a showpiece event on the cliched bigger pitch.
Yeah. Mm. 6,044 they were at Bloomfield Road. The game in League Two we wanted to talk about, Clarkie, was MK Dons drawing 1-1 with Wrexham. Two teams going for promotion, but two red cards, an ill-tempered affair, one might say.
Big time, yeah. Well, the first one, the Lewington red card, was in protest at the game's most controversial incident. Okonkwo, who's on loan from Arsenal, is the Wrexham keeper. And he's had some brilliant moments this season. He's also had some iffy moments. And last night kind of encapsulated him. An unbelievable save from Tomlinson, heading top bins, and he's full stretch, tips it onto the post. Just magnificent. And then from the same player, Tomlinson, he just spills it and it drip. He kind of scrambles back, gets it on the goal line. And for me, takes it over the goal line. I've paused it. It looks clear that it's over that goal line. And the linesman, the referee, they didn't give the goal. And Lewington couldn't handle it. He just continued his protest and in the end got himself sent off. Really interesting comments from Mike Williamson afterwards, saying, basically said, I've got a lot of respect for Wrexham's manager, for the club as a whole. They're a fantastic team, but legitimate goals have been scored by Mansfield and Notts County and by us tonight. He says, he's basically saying, is the fanfare that comes with Wrexham subconsciously creating bias among referees? I don't think so, but it's interesting that he, as a manager, as a rival manager, has picked up on that. Because for me, the McGoldrick goal for Notts County at the weekend was absolutely chest, not hand. And this one was 100% over the line. So they've got some bonus points here, Wrexham, in my opinion. They should probably have had one at the weekend and maybe none in this game, yet they come away with four. So, and how important might that be come the end of the season? So I don't want to take too much away from Wrexham. You know, they are a good team. I think they played pretty well in this game. Even game. Both teams had chances. But they're getting the rub of the green. That is without question.
And they are third by a point ahead of Crewe with a game in hand on them. They also have a game in hand on Stockport. Yes, Adrian.
Very quickly, there was a goal that Mansfield scored at Walsall at the weekend that was definitely over the line as well. And Nigel Clough said afterwards, boys, that with all the money that's in English football, the Premier League, surely some of the drip down can be spent on getting goal line technology. You don't want the full VAR, but the Championship have got goal line tech, and I think League One and League Two should have it, because it will influence relegations. It will influence promotions. And we've seen it, you know, twice happen in a week. I mean, what do you think? I mean, it's got to be worth spending that money, hasn't it? It's almost saying, the fact that it isn't there, that their football is less important. What's your take?
Yeah, I think they should definitely do it. And also, you know, there are a fair few grounds in the Football League. Walsall and Stevenage are two that immediately spring to mind. They're used by Premier League clubs, either for their academy sides or their women's sides anyway. So you think that they could chip in for a bit of the cost for it as well. But yeah, feels like a no-brainer. But yeah, spending money in football, in the Football League, not something that happens freely, is it? Not on sensible things anyway. Well, a little nod to Walsall as well. Big win for them there. Doing okay all of a sudden. But that will do for the midweek review. And next, we'll talk about some managerial movements. Right. I have hastily reassembled the chaps to talk about the big breaking story this Wednesday lunchtime. Reports abound that Millwall are ditching Joe Edwards and replacing him with old favourite Neil Harris, who was in charge of Cambridge on Tuesday night as they lost to Bolton. I'll ask Clarkie about Neil Harris and the effects on Cambridge shortly, but Sam, Joe Edwards is somebody who you and I know from his time at Chelsea. Has he been given long enough here to try and turn Millwall around, or does the fact that they've slipped so close to the relegation zone mean that they weren't left with much of a choice?
Well, it feels harsh. I think it's been a tough run of games recently. And if you look at them in isolation, I don't think it's a disaster, because the games they've been losing, not taking points from, you'd probably anticipate that. I just think, I mean, nothing has surprised me like this in the Championship this season. Honestly, my mouth was wide open when I saw Aaron Paul breaking this news about an hour ago. So there's a big part of me that I'm questioning whether Joe is a bad manager, and I think it's far too early to judge that, or was Gary Rowett actually doing a pretty good job with that group of players and that squad at Millwall. And I would absolutely suggest it's the latter. What they've done is try to change the style, probably change quite a lot of the club by making this appointment with Joe Edwards. And it was one that needed time and 100% an opportunity for him to mould the squad, which you do over a few transfer windows. There's so much kind of dead wood within that squad, players that are out of contract, is too old, needs to freshen it up, needs to bring in some players that were going to be able to play the type of football. So for that reason, absolutely needed more time. And I'm sure with that, he would have had a better opportunity. And the financial aspect of dropping out of the division sometimes makes clubs make decisions. And that is 100% what's happened here. They need to stay in the Championship. They desperately want to do that. And that's why they've acted. But I don't think we should think back on this period and think that Joe Edwards has been a disaster, because I think in time he could have turned things around.
What a season for Neil Harris then, Clark. He's going to have managed in League Two, League One and the Championship all in the same season.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I'd never thought he should have been in League Two, really. He is a manager that I rate. And I was surprised that Gillingham moved him on. I thought it was quite the coup for Cambridge. And he's done very well there, hasn't he? I think 18 points from 14 games is an upturn. He's got them up towards mid-table, out of that relegation trouble. I feel desperately sorry for Cambridge, I've got to say, because, you know, it would be in their rights to hold out, I would imagine, for some serious compensation here. You know, they've identified Neil. They've brought him in December. Look, you know, less than 3 months later, he's been poached away. I think Millwall have got to pay decent money to Cambridge United to compensate the disruption to their season and their plans. What I hope happens, and that maybe natural order will be restored, is that Cambridge ring up Mark Bonner and say, look, Millwall have taken Chopper back. We'd love to have you back. Can we go as we were? Because that just feels like the only way that Cambridge can be stabilised after such a shock, because they wouldn't have been expecting this. And with Sam, I think it's incredibly harsh on Joe, who was trying to build something and would have built something very different. And that was the idea behind his appointment. But they've had a panic up. They're not the first club to get spooked by being in relegation trouble. And that good intention of changing the style of play has gone out the window, hasn't it? They don't care now. They just need to survive.
All right. Well, look, we'll keep an eye on what happens with that and where Joe Edwards ends up next. But Neil Harris doing a great job of falling upwards this season. Michael Beale and Sunderland never felt like a great fit, did it? Beale, future endeavoured by the Black Cats on Monday after just 12 games in charge. He lost six of those, the final straw being against predecessor Tony Mowbray's Birmingham on Saturday. Pretty calamitous for all involved, this. You might have seen, listener, the Twitter thread alleging that Michael Beale basically set up a secondary account, which he then used to promote Michael Beale. Who comes out worse here, Sam, do you think? Beale himself or Sunderland? And why did they sack Tony Mowbray again?
Toss-up probably, isn't it? If you're talking about like the owners, then yeah, they don't come out brilliantly. I think when Tony Mowbray left, obviously it was because there was some difference of opinions with regard to probably how the place was being run in terms of how they were building the squad. Probably that lack of experience, lack of involvement maybe from Tony Mowbray in bringing in the type of player he wanted. I thought when they sacked him, I think me and Clarkey both anticipated they were going to go for probably someone from a European league or Will Steele, the manager, I think, continually getting linked. And they went for someone who it would seem was the easy option and probably interviews very well and probably did some good PR. Before he rocked up for his interview at the training ground or whatever. So, yeah, they don't look great, do they, in this? Because I think the supporters, probably a lot of it was because of the demeanour of Tony Mowbray and the character that he is, that the supporters liked him, even if they were starting to doubt maybe his ability to get them in the playoff mix again this year because the results were inconsistent latterly. So I think people were a little bit despondent with the results. But yeah, Mick Beale, obviously, where he lands next is going to be fascinating because he's shown very little, hasn't he, in the last few games. That vibrant, exciting Sunderland team that we loved watching back in the last season, that has absolutely not been evident, apart from maybe a couple of halves at the Stadium of Light recently and all the noise around it. The interviews, Obviously, his relationship with the players. There was a supposed potential fallout with Pritchard. I think there was, you know, visibly you could see those two falling out. I think it was a Portman Road. Then we had the stuff with Trey Hume at the weekend, talk of calling the players in for training and him having a day off. The supporters don't like my accent. You know, all that stuff just doesn't really help, doesn't it? It doesn't endear you. And we know is it different? Yeah, it is. I think those, you know, a town like Sunderland, a club like Sunderland, it's so passionate, isn't it? You know, to watch 10 minutes of that documentary, it's a different world, isn't it? People live and breathe it. You've got to buy into it, I think, even if you're playing a bit of a game. And he played the wrong game, didn't he? Just on the handshake, I wasn't sure it was particularly necessary from the player. I think if you're losing 2-1 in dying embers of a game, get in the dugout. So clearly Bill saw him, shook his hand, but I think a bit of a storm in a teacup, that one.
Yeah, no, I agree on that. Yeah, it was just a relationship sort of mismatch, wasn't it? And it just, no, zero chemistry between Mick Beale and the supporters. I think Sam's absolutely right. Sunderland is one of several unique clubs, I think, out there that, well, you need to have certain ingredients to thrive. And if you look back at the history, certain elements of personality have been really prevalent in their best managers, in their most successful times. You need to be a big character to manage Sunderland, in my opinion. You need to be a sensational communicator, someone that is really clear and honest and upfront and that gets the fans and wants to get the fans and wants to build that relationship between himself and the supporters. And you also need to play a bit of more attacking football. That it was flat under Beale and under Mowbray. It had a little bit of pizzazz, a bit of swashbuckle. And even if they weren't winning, the fans were enjoying it. So, yeah, that's the tick list for me that Sunderland need to fill when appointing the next guy.
Well, it's Mike Dodds, interim till the end of the season. We'll see if he gets the gig on a full-time basis. While we were talking about Tony Mowbray, sad news this week that he's going to have to step aside from day-to-day duties as Birmingham manager for around 6 to 8 weeks as he receives treatment for an unnamed illness. He said, undergoing treatment will necessitate that I temporarily step away from the technical area. I'll continue to provide advice and counsel whilst undergoing treatment. Obviously, not really much more we can say other than he seems like a really nice fella and we hope that he gets well soon. The other managerial movement, Adrian, since last we spoke, is the magnificently named Andre Brighton writer coming in at Huddersfield, former Schalke and FC Zurich boss. He won the league in Switzerland. He's twice got teams promoted to the Bundesliga in Germany. And just based on that makes him feel like much more of a Huddersfield type candidate than maybe a couple of the previous incumbents.
They love a German up and comer, don't they, Huddersfield? Yeah, I'm sure I've had a few pints of Brighton Reiter during my time, but I love a lager, love a German lager. But look, it seems like a good fit. A little bit what I was talking about with Sunderland. Their preferred manager seems to be of this ilk. He's known for high pressing, fast football, sort of counter-attacking stuff. And it's kind of what I think Huddersfield need to be. Yeah, I think they were just a little bit too low blockish under Darren Moore. Maybe even Neil Warnock a little bit. But yeah, they just need to be outstanding off the ball. Because they don't have talent. They're not going to out-talent teams in the championship, not with the budget they've got, not with the squad that they've accrued. They have to do the basics much better than most other teams in the championship. And this guy, given his track record at Zurich in particular, where he was great, seems like he'll bring that in. So yeah, I wish him well. And he comes into a key stage of the season, doesn't he? With Sheffield Wednesday and QPR showing real signs of life. Huddersfield are in a relegation battle, so there's no real bedding in period. He's got to get a tune out of them instantly.
Yeah, no bedding in period, Sam. 2 points above the relegation zone. But I wonder, actually, if he's got a decent first game. Watford away on Saturday. Not so much pressure as a home game. Against a team who've struggled to perform recently. He was in the stands for the home defeat to Hull. This might not be a bad way for him to kick off.
I think there's probably a decent feeling around Huddersfield at the moment, is my gut. You know, I saw them at QPR a few weeks ago and they were really flat, but the performances have been good. They've been racking up the opportunities. You know, chances galore in the last few games, obviously scoring goals as well under the caretaker. So there's been a switch in mentality which will probably lend itself to those characteristics that Clarkey was just talking about with a new manager, because John Worthington's been going for it. And, you know, Clarkey says there's a bit of a lack of quality, and I would agree with that. But you look at a front three supporting the striker of Radoni, Wiles and Sorber Thomas. I mean, that's not bad if you can get them going. I think clearly they wanted to add the firepower, and Radulovic and Healy came in. I'm not sure there's an abundance of goals, and maybe that quality, that championship quality, that is going to garner loads of goals from those two. But I just think there's a bit of an excitement about them right now. And yeah, I think it's an all right game. I don't think it would have mattered if it was at home. And Watford, we know, are kind of inconsistently brilliant. They've had some great performances, and they can be really indifferent. So wouldn't be surprised whatever the outcome of that one was. But if you look at the teams around Huddersfield right now in the Championship, they're one of the, I would say, most vibrant teams. You know, when you look at the ones directly above them, teams are in freefall. And that's why all of a sudden we've got what could be a brilliant battle between seven or eight clubs for relegation.
Yep, looking very tight down the bottom there. I think you probably go up to Birmingham on 38 points, currently six above the relegation zone. Okay, we're going to get into some of the big games of the weekend next. Proper treat in the Championship on Friday night is the top 2 meet at Elland Road, Leeds versus Leicester. 9 points between them ahead of kickoff then, Adrian. So if Leeds win this, is there any chance they can reel Leicester in? Is that what they're thinking, or are they just purely thinking about keeping a gap or putting a gap between themselves and Ipswich because they're only ahead of them on goal difference ahead of this?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's all about top two. I don't think they've really got their eye on the title. It's just about promotion, isn't it? Huge game. I mean, for me, this is the game of the season. Beautifully set up. Leeds on this incredible run. You know, was it 8 straight wins, 7 clean sheets? Just in phenomenal form. And then Leicester, who are a marvellous team, just having a little bit of a wobble with that defeat against Middlesbrough. But for me, that was an anomaly. They're all over them. They had loads of chances. So I don't think they come into this in bad shape at all. I just think there's just so many great matchups all over the pitch. I mean, it's for me, they are the two best teams. I'm looking at Mavadidi against Gray. Like the look of that. I think Gray has been outstanding at right back, but defensively up against a winger like Mavadidi, that is the acid test. I think it could be tough for him in midfield. Gruev, who I've loved watching lately, I think he's been superb up against Dewsbury Hall. And there were winks, really, in terms of the two of them. Who's going to control the game best? Who's going to prompt Vardy against Ampadu? Or it could be Patson Daka against Ampadu. That's an exciting duel. Everywhere you look, yeah, I see matchups that excite. I'm just fascinated to see how Leicester go about it. I think that they will press feverishly because I think the only way, if Leicester allow the Leeds front four or front three to really get at them with Somerville and Nonto and Routier and the striker, then that's going to be tough for them to contain. So what I think they've got to do is deny them quality service. And the only way to deny Leeds front three or four quality service is to go for it on the press and to really get after them and force mistakes higher up the pitch or force them to kick it long or rush their passes. And that's going to make for great viewing because if Leeds can play through that press, they've got players like Somerville and Nonto and Routier that can destroy anyone. So yeah, what a game. I'm leaning towards Leicester actually to put a stop to this Leeds run, but yeah, it could go either way here.
Leeds unbeaten at Elland Road all season. They haven't even dropped points in the league at home since September. Two managers, Sam, lest we forget, in their first seasons with their current clubs. Is there one who's impressed you more out of Enzo Maresca and Daniel Farke?
No, I think it's probably pretty even. Yeah, I think Maresca probably started the season better. And, you know, obviously you could see his work throughout pre-season was very evident in the early weeks of the season, a real shift in the way that they were playing. But I think Daniel Farke, mitigating circumstances, he probably was a little bit unsure of who was going to be available, and hence why it's only really taken shape over the last few months, that real consistency. spoke quite a lot early part of the season of maybe a lack of definite starters at fullback or a lack of threat from the fullback positions. And Clarkie mentioned Archie Gray. I think latterly his relationship with Nonto on the right has been really good. And Firpo all of a sudden, I think 4 assists since he came into the side at left back. So it took Daniel Farker a little bit longer to get players fit and probably to mould those partnerships, Ampadu and Rodon. And then the midfield, Gruev, Kamara latterly. So, yeah, I think it took a little bit longer. Leicester maybe were more in their stride a little bit quicker because he started the season with a really strong group and a really strong 11. But both equally impressive. And, yeah, this will be fascinating. I'd probably lean towards Leeds, actually, in this one, given that they did a bit of a job on Leicester away from home. And, yeah, those front players that Clarkie mentioned, be interesting to see how I think the wingers on either side get on against the opposite fullbacks is going to be key because they're essentially so vital to both sides. Ruter as well, love watching him dropping in. Maybe he'll have to do a bit of a job on Harry Winks at times as well, but when he gets the ball, he's such a creative spark that he could be the difference as he was in that return game. So massive game, but I would probably say, having seen Leicester Ipswich, that big one recently, and Leicester not getting maximum points, I still came away with that thinking they've kind of in third gear and still far and away, I think, look the most superior side in the division.
I'll very quickly on Ruter running off Winks would worry me if I was Leicester, because he's physically just so superior, isn't he? I just wonder whether they might get in the legs of Ricardo, bring him into midfield maybe, and just stiffen it up in that zone. But yeah, Farker for me is like an enigma. Like, and I also think this game is a little bit like Klopp Guardiola. Do you know what I mean? In terms of Leeds, remind me quite a lot of Liverpool, where they're fast and they get the ball to the front three and who are absolutely dynamite, particularly out wide. And then you've got Maresca playing basically Manchester City football. Farker for me isn't a great tactician, but he's a great judge of a player, and he's a brilliant. He's got a brilliant mind in terms of just seeing pictures and making sensible decisions, like Ampadu at the back, Archie Gray at right back. A lot of managers wouldn't have even, you know, considered it, considering how well they were doing as a duo midfield, but he could see it. And I think underneath that sort of calm exterior is a pretty sharp footballing brain there with Daniel Farker.
Yeah, big game, looking forward to it. Depending on the time of day of the fixture, Owls versus Robins would be an absolute bloodbath. Hold it in the day, maybe a Robin escapes, but at night time there's only one winner. Sheffield Wednesday versus Bristol City is what I'm trying to say here. Sam, you're a big Danny Roll guy. I watched his post-match from that win at Millwall. He is a strikingly handsome individual, I'll give you that much. Two wins from three for them now. That victory against Millwall was huge, wasn't it? But they're finding it difficult to pull themselves away from that relegation zone, and as it stands, they're 4 points from safety still.
Yeah, and I don't want to go too big because I know things can just turn around, but I just think these three games are enormous. Bristol City at home, Rotherham away, Plymouth at home. I mean, what an opportunity to put a little mini run together, and then they play Leeds and Ipswich. And by the time these five games are out of the way, there's eight games remaining, and they could be much further adrift. So I just think, I know the great escape can happen, but they've got, I think, spirit, they've got momentum, they've got the crowd with them at the moment. I think this is a opportune moment to go and get, you know, 6 points, 7 points from these three games and really give themselves an opportunity. Because I'd still, I mean, it's a massive game for Leeds as well. I think Leeds play Sheffield Wednesday and Huddersfield in the next three or four, as well as this massive game on Friday. So there's some huge Yorkshire derbies coming up for Leeds as well. But Sheffield Wednesday, I think this is a great opportunity. I think tactically this will be really interesting. I think got two managers here who certainly in Danny Roll's case is mixing things up. He's changing the shapes, very flexible. All of a sudden, they've got a goal scorer in Ugbo. What, three for him? I think they are the lowest scorers at this point now. So that's kind of a real positive going into these games. They've got pace in the wide positions. I think Bristol City are improving. I think they're going to be a good side when Liam Manning has an opportunity to bring some players in and move some players on. I think they're still a little bit short, given the inconsistency. And away from home, you just never know with Bristol City. I mean, they're liable to turn up and put on a masterclass. I think they've lost more games at home than they have away. So they are a threat on the road. I wouldn't want to call it, but I think because this is just a list of games coming up that Danny Roll would have highlighted in the office and identified need to get points from, I'd probably suggest that maybe the home side would be slightly more motivated for this one.
We shall see. Let's go into League One. Leaders Portsmouth heading to South London to take on Charlton at the Valley. Clarkie, Pompey won 1 of 6 between mid-December and mid-January, but they've really turned things round. Won the last 4 and beaten in 7, won 6 of those. I think we were sort of getting ready to write them off, weren't we, and say, oh, maybe they'll cling on to a playoff place, but maybe we should have had a bit more faith.
Yeah, I think I was guilty of maybe underestimating them as well. I thought that they might just fall away, but they've kicked on and they've done so with loads of injuries. You know, they've lost a lot of players. I think 12 players this season for Pompey have had surgery. 10 have been out long term. I think 6 are out for the rest of the season. These are key players as well, some of them. So I think they're doing quite magnificently. They've still got a good team. Don't you know? I looked at it the other day. Bishop up front, Paddy Lane, Callum Lang, Kamaru's done really well. You know, got Owen Moxon's coming to the midfield, who did so well for Carlisle as well. So, yeah, Yenge was on the bench. He was a talent. So, yeah, that Pompey are worthy of their position. When we spoke to John Messina on this pod earlier in the season, they were sort of nicking wins, weren't they? And I think we asked him about that and he said, yeah, you're probably right, yeah. And we need to score more goals was basically his feeling. And they are. They're scoring more freely, aren't they? So yeah, this would be an interesting game against Charlton. I'd fancy them to score 1, 2 or 3, at least at the Valley, against a defence that's really struggled to keep out the opposition this season. It's just a case of, will Pompey hold firm at the other end? Because Charlton under Nathan Jones, I think they'll see this as an opportunity to go for it to some degree and get in the faces and to bloody the nose of a big gun. I think Charlton, who scored 3 at Bolton, will go on the front foot here and try and outscore Pompey. Should be a great game.
Horrible run of games for Charlton, isn't it? Bolton, Pompey, and then Derby. Maybe that works in Nathan Jones' favour, though, Sam, because they're easy ones to get the players up for and nobody's expecting you to get anything, and he's already got a point from Bolton.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. He was quite infused after the draw against Lincoln, and obviously that was a really good result. And I think the fans are fully on board, which is a bit of a first. I know it's the honeymoon period with recent managers, I mean. I've got 21 games written down here, and I think that's the last time they had a clean sheet, which is just incredible. Yeah. So they need to get that under their belt. But in terms of the setup, I think 3-5-2, going a bit longer, the intensity you'd expect from a Nathan Jones side, considering they're probably all scared.
I mean, he's such a skinny guy. He's not scary. Like, he's like the slimmest player I think I've ever played with, Nathan Jones.
You'd imagine him, you know, fashioning a weapon out of something, though, fairly easily.
No, honestly, you wouldn't. He's a born again Christian. He is quite a gentle guy.
Didn't we do something on the podcast about which manager would you least like to play paintball against, or something, or something on those lines? I'm sure Nathan Jones and Alex Neil would have been your answer.
I mean, Matt is easily scared. We have to put that out there. Yeah, look, Nathan is not scared. Nathan is like a really kind of gentle character, but when it comes to football, he's just into it. And he won't tolerate anything less than you doing your job and doing it fast and doing it, you know, how he asks you to do it. Otherwise, he'll let you know about it.
That's contrasting the old dugouts then, eh? at the weekend, Messino's coolness personified, isn't he? But I think you're right, Matt, because I think the Charlton fans that haven't been going maybe will go to this one, and obviously Portsmouth sell out, you know, the away section wherever they go. So I think that there will be a really good atmosphere and that they'll have a bit of a go, but they need to improve defensively. But they've got great options in attack. And yeah, considering Nathan Jones has got really good experience of being successful at that level and he's going for a formation and a setup and a style that he knows really well, I'd expect the players to buy in, especially with only, what, you know, a dozen, 15 games or whatever remaining. I think they'll turn a corner and have too much.
Haven't won since November, so they need to pick up a victory soon. In League 2, for now, our Forest Green Rovers, they host Tranmere this weekend in what's presumably being billed as an all-Rovers affair. by some, including me. Not looking good for FGR at the minute, Adrian, is it? Steve Cotterill, we wanted to talk about how he's getting on. Got a great win against Barrow, then lost at Crawley. They haven't won a home league game since October, and they've scored one goal in their last seven at home, all comps. So it's pretty easy to see where their problems stem from.
Yeah, the home form has been just dreadful, hasn't it? Not just this season, but last as well. Two wins from 16 at home. I mean, it's the worst home record by a long shot. The saving grace is that Tranmere aren't the best away. Only three away wins out of 16 for them on the road. So maybe this is a good opportunity for them. The damage was done, by the way, last year when Ferguson, you know, was appointed. You know, we said at that time that it was so bad. They were so bad in League One. And they had such a poor squad that I thought at the time that squad will be in relegation trouble in League Two. And even though it's sort of different players, a lot of them, you know, that's where they find themselves. And I don't know if you caught this, but they've had a cull down there in Nailsworth. They've sacked the director of football. They've sacked the CEO. They've sacked the head of recruitment. They've sacked the head of football operations. And they've sacked the head of match day as well. So I don't know who's left. It's basically just Steve Cotterill doing
what does he
it.
Do the head of match day, and why has he been sacked?
I know. I don't know. It was a bit harsh. I mean, the director of football, Alan Steele, who had good rep actually at Brentford B, he was the sort of brains behind what was going on there. I mean, he's had a mare, hasn't he, really, with the managerial appointments, with the recruitment of players. So I'm not surprised he's gone. But yeah, Cotterill 3-4-1-2 is the formation. Fankati Darbo is in favour. Troy Deeney, obviously, didn't like him, but Cotterill does. And yeah, this is a huge game for obvious reasons. I think, yeah, Tranmere score goals, but let in goals. Forest Green, I think they've got to go for it here. They need wins. They've got to throw caution to the wind and probably boom it and ask questions of this Tranmere rear guard. They've got to do something at home now, because if they don't, and they don't win their home games, they're heading out of the EFL.
It's actually quite hard. I mean, apologies, Tranmere fans, but you know, you're kind of mid-table, not really that much interesting to talk about at the moment. So Forest Green wise, Sam, it's kind of hard to make a case for them all, certainly, actually, at the moment, isn't it? Forest Green are, what, 6 points behind Grimsby, and they've played a game more. Probably only go up to Colchester in 21st on 30 points. You'd think Doncaster have got a big enough gap. So it's going to be really tricky for Steve Cotterill to get them out of the bottom two.
Yeah, of course. I think they've only had the one win, haven't they, up at Barrow under him. Mm. It sounds with, you know, what Clarkey said about the outgoings in different positions at the club, you know, maybe Steve Cotterill would fancy it next year, you know, relevant of what division they're in. And you know, I think that would be a really good thing for them. Mm. I did a job with him, actually, recently, and he was really good company. Enjoyed it. Yeah. We had a good chemistry, I would say. Maybe he'll get me down there as a stadium manager.
Whatever. How would you describe his personality then?
Bubbly. Yeah, says it as it is. Yeah, I think we talked about a few problem clubs, you know, in the division, and I was kind of quite black and white, you know, about Charlton, for example, about the mess upstairs. And I think we agreed on quite a few things, which was nice. I was obviously safe, played with a straight bat first few answers to get him on side. But no, it was nice. It was enjoyable. And that's often been the way. I've worked with Neil Warnock. I did something with Sam Allardyce, and you go into it and you're a little bit sheepish and, yeah, you're kind of unaware of what you're going to get. But they've all been brilliant, which has been nice. So I hope he does well. And I think just looking at the team as well, all of a sudden, I don't know, I give them a bit more of a chance. I just see that you said that Darbo on one side, he's got Dominic Thompson on the other side. The back three all of a sudden with Keogh, Innes, possibly Jordan Moore-Taylor to come back in. I know these are really experienced guys who maybe best days are behind them, certainly in Richard Keogh's case, that would be true. But I just think all of a sudden there's a bit more experience, there's a bit more nous. A front two of Doidge and Stevens has the potential, if they can get back going what they did previously at the club. So I'm sure they'll win some games, but whether it's going to be enough, I'm not so sure. And for Tranmere, 30 points in 17 games under Nigel Adkins. And I think historically Tranmere fans have come for me at times when I've given them a piss. So I'll just leave them with that and a brilliant victory over Stockport last time out. And players returning from injury, so they could have a strong end to the season. But of course, they're looking at a bit of a miracle to be anything other than mid-table.
Yeah, setting themselves up for next season, you would think. All right, we're nearly done for the day. A reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet, who have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Very quick quiz before we go. Three questions, hands up.
Before Clarky beats first. Me, can I just say, can we change the format next time? Like, I just want to, question each. Like, hand okay. up is nonsense. That, okay, right. Thank you.
Noted. There were calls for Tweet of the Week to return, I noticed on social media.
I saw that too. Yeah, I will bear it in mind. But we're doing a quiz this week. Here's the first question. Leicester haven't won at Elland Road since a 2-1 victory in 2012. Which former England striker came off the bench at half time for the Foxes in that game? Adrian?
Oh, Nugent.
Straight away. Nugent is wrong. I was going to continue the question with a few clues, which might work in your favour, Sam. He also played for Villa, Manchester City and Ankaragücü.
Excuse me?
Bless you, yeah.
So we're looking for a Leicester player.
Leicester player came off the bench at Elland Road in 2012. He also played for England. He was a striker. He played for Aston Villa, Manchester City
and Ankaragücü. Give him a few more clues, why don't you? Tell him his surname if you want.
I didn't know he played for Leicester until I looked this up
yesterday. Oh, I think I've got it.
Go on then. Ooh.
Darius Vassell?
Darius Vassell is right. Did you know he played for Leicester? Did anybody know
I
that?
I didn't.
Before?
I just went on the Villa and City.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. All right. Well done. Second question. Who is older, Danny Roll or Liam Manning? Sam?
He's just gone 50-50 there, isn't he?
Liam Manning was in the youth team when I was at Ipswich, so he'd have been...
Oh, come on. You can't have a think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Just pick a name.
6 years younger than me. Oi. So it's Danny Roll. Who do you want, youngest or oldest?
Oldest.
Oldest is Liam Manning.
Okay. Yeah, a bit of cheating there, really. But
what, by doing maths?
No, just by putting your hand up before you had your answer ready. It's not in the spirit of the game.
I would have said that.
Yeah, it was a pretty easy one, wasn't it? Manning's 38, Roll is 34. Okay, last question. Before taking the Forest Green Rovers gig, Steve Cottrell was manager of Shrewsbury. Which club was he in charge of immediately before the Shrews?
Oh, that's a good one.
I've just made that up, but I've gone early. Was it Birmingham?
It was Birmingham, yes.
Oh. Yes.
Moral victory there, I think, Clarky, in a lot
yeah,
of ways.
Yeah, it's almost worth a bonus point.
All right, look, maybe we'll mix the quiz up. Maybe we'll ditch it. Maybe we'll bring back Tweet of the Week. Who knows?
Yeah. I enjoy all of them.
Yeah, I thought the Darius Vassell question was very good, if I may say so myself. What a way to finish, listener. Thanks for staying with us for this week's show. We'll be back with another one next week for you. Enjoy the football if you're off to a game this weekend, and we'll catch up with you again next week. Bye for now.